Our next speaker will be Don Schutz, Sustainable Development of Energy and Mineral Resources in the 21st Century. Don is the president of Geonuclear, Inc. He has his undergraduate degree from Yale in 1956, his PhD in 1964.
Present environment for the environment began around 1969 with the development of the problem in the Santa Barbara Channel, which got everybody excited about environmental protection. That led to the establishment of the EPA and to the beginning of environmental restrictions on a wide variety of our activities, but certainly for this symposium on our development of mineral resources. At the same time in 1970, matter of fact, in May of 1970, Texas was the major oil producer at the time and reached peak production. The United States then began a long-term decline, so peak oil started in 1970, and the environmental movement started in 1970. Now, in the 1980s, there began to be concern about climate change, that observed that the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere was increasing. We knew about greenhouse effect. And so in 1992, there was a symposium called the Rio Conference, a World Summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro. And out of that conference came the Earth Summit, the Agenda 21, which was a strategic plan for the world, the 21st century. Out of that plan came the Framework Commission on Climate Change, which is the FCCC, the UN Commission on Sustainable Development, which meets at various places, but usually in New York annually. The Kyoto Protocol came out of that establishment, and the International Panel on Climate Change came from that. So that was really the beginning of the movement towards sustainable development. Now, sustainable development at that time was defined as sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Well, that's very important, but it's the devil's in the details, as they say. The Hans-Holger Rogner of the world, in his World Energy Assessment, the IAEA, was a little bit more specific and said that production and use of energy should not endanger the quality of life of current and future generations and should not exceed the carrying capacity of the ecosystem. If we look to examples of exceeding the carrying capacity of the ecosystem, we have only to go back to the influence of the climate change in the Little Ice Age in Great Britain, which by 1600 had led to the exhaustion of their renewable forest resource and forced the beginning of the use of coal. And then By the 1700s, because the coal mines were flooded with water, led to the development of the steam engine to pump out the water so they could get more coal, and this led to the Industrial Revolution, which then started using more and more coal, particularly in the UK and around the world, to they went from one problem into another. Because there was no concept then of sustainability or of acting so as to not exceed the carrying capacity of the system. UK forests couldn't sustain the demands that were made on it. Now, sustainability comes at the intersection of economic considerations, the environmental considerations, and sociological considerations. Now, we heard about what the problem is that we need to find more ore deposits or more oil and gas deposits. Well, we know where a lot of them are and we can't develop them. We know about deposits off the East Coast, the West Coast, and in the Arctic. But we don't develop those because not because we don't know the geology or we don't have the technology. It's because of the sociological aspects of it. We don't have the political will to do that. Basic parameters of sustainability are economically profitable. Profit gets to be kind of a bad word, but ultimately, if something is not financially profitable, it's not sustainable. You can't have a sustainable activity that's based on government subsidies. That is a violation of fundamental sustainability. But it must be, the environment should be improved by what you do. So it has to be environmentally profitable. As long as you engage in something which degrades the environment or doesn't provide the wealth and resources necessary to restore the environment or make it better, it's not sustainable. Any energy alternative has to any energy alternative has to produce more energy than it uses. There has to be an energy profit. We found out what happens when you convert corn to ethanol. It takes more energy to do it than you get out of it. And so that is not a sustainable thing. Fortunately, we found out about it we only spent a few billion dollars to do that, maybe $10, $20 billion setting up corn ethanol production because of political reasons until we found out that it was unsustainable and probably will just fade out of the picture. So, but then there's this matter of society has to be better off. If in our relatively democratic society, where people do have political control, if they're not happy with something, it isn't going to go anywhere, and it isn't going to be sustainable. So there has to be, these are the profits that have to be made by anything which is going to evolve as a sustainable solution. So what I'm going to propose is that nuclear energy, we should evaluate that for its whether it meets these criteria of sustainability. Nuclear energy right now, it has a significant presence. 20% of the U.S. electricity is nuclear. Has a sustainable future because of a number of reasons. We'll talk about fuel supply, and we'll talk about the safety and environmental impact, and it's economically profitable based on the present return on financial investment and certainly a positive energy return. But for long-term sustainability, and sustainability is a time thing. It's not something a goal that you achieve, a project that you complete. Sustainability is something that goes on over a long period of time. But for true long-term sustainability from nuclear power, it's going to require the development of fast breeder reactors, which burn the fuel that we have more efficiently and which can burn up the waste, which causes our sociological problems. The sheer magnitude of a comparison of the nuclear alternative to coal is that for one ectajoule of electricity, which is equivalent to about one quadrillion BTUs, one quad, We need 120 million tons of coal, and all the transportation and the waste problems and so forth, not to mention carbon dioxide and so forth, is equivalent to 5,000 tons of uranium required in a light water reactor and 50 tons of uranium used in a fast breeder reactor. So I think that with leverage of this sort, that we need to have a substantial amount of attention given to the nuclear alternative. Talking about the resources that are available, if we look at these are reserves calculated by the USGS, and the number of years is about 180 years. The IPCC used a little bit different calculation, came up with a larger amount of material. But we get into, for long-term availability, we get into such things as phosphate deposits and seawater extraction. So there's truly immense amounts of uranium available as resources, if not reserves. And then when we look at what we can do with the fast reactors, we're talking tens of thousands or millions of years of availability of nuclear fuel. So nuclear fuel is not really an issue of sustainability, although it is an argument that is used by anti-nuclear forces, saying that if we did all the electricity in the world with nuclear power, it would, the available uranium would only last 14 years. Well, that's political rhetoric. One of the reasons that uranium will last for a long time is, and why it helps us, the sustainability of it, is that the cost of uranium, as the cost goes up, the cost of generating electricity goes up a lot slower for nuclear than it does for coal and gas. So it has an edge on financial sustainability. Some of the new advanced reactors, will go through this very fast because these are concept things. There's not one of these things that exists, but this is a small size reactor that burns up uranium-238 and plutonium-239 to reduce waste. It's a sealed unit that can be monitored, and its proliferation. You can't say it's proliferation proof, but it's as close to it as you can get, and it would produce about a gigawatt of electricity. And this is a hybrid fusion fission reactor. We've invested billions into the ITER fusion system, and where the real breakthrough on using fusion energy may be to combine it with a fission reactor to be able to use the nuclear fuel that we have available to us and burn up waste at the same time. So I think that's all I want to say really about the fuel resources, the fuel minerals of uranium, and of course thorium goes along with that, but I didn't deal with that separately. But so let's talk about energy resources in non-fuels. And this was a statement. Whether or not a global run on lithium pans out as projected by the worriers, the situation highlights an unappreciated risk when it comes to alternative energy, namely securing supplies of natural resources, which gets us right into our subject. In other words, if some green technologies are successful in displacing fossil fuels, there could be shortages of materials that most people never heard of before. Material, neodymium, terbium, terbium, dysprosium, turbine gearboxes, high-strength magnets. Excuse me. lithium and lanthanum in batteries for electric cars, platinum in fuel cells, europium. And here's where we see the economics of the rare earths is involved in environmental consideration. Right now, 95% of rare earth production is in China. Why? Because they're the only one that have a lax enough environmental rules to actually carry out production. It's not where all the resource is really located. It's where it's possible to exploit. And I think that's a major point of this whole talk. Here's one of the lithium batteries. And this is one of the lithium mines in Bolivia, which is supposed to have of the order of 100 million tons of lithium. But they still think that might not be enough to fuel all the electric cars. So that's, I think I'll stop at that point.